Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until He takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. Championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in to a brand new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the stories of BYU athletes from their very own mouths. My guest today is Mr. Triple-Double himself, Kyle Collinsworth. Kyle, thanks for taking a few minutes today. I appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
So when I say Mr. Triple-Double, is that something that still resonates with you? Is it still something you take pride in, or have you moved on and it feels like a lifetime ago?
It does feel like a lifetime ago, but that's still how people call me when they see me. So I roll with it. I mean, it's obviously a cool thing, but
there are worse things to be called,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Exactly. Definitely.
If that's what people want to call you, that's not too shabby. So let's start there, though. You're the record holder in triple-doubles in men's college basketball. You had 12 in your career. Are you surprised that that record has still held up?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, records, you know, like my rebounding record got broken fast. Like, records are meant to be broken, so I would assume it would be broken by now, but you just never know. It just takes the right guy, right, to come through and to quickly break it.
I was always curious because I covered your career when you were playing at BYU. During your playing career, were you trying for triple-doubles, or did you go in with the mentality, if I play my best and I do what I can do, if they come, they come? How did you handle that?
Yeah, the big reason I was able to get him was we broke it down mentally. We've discovered, and we meaning Craig Manning, he was a sports guy here, help us with our mental stuff.
We've done a podcast with Craig. He's great.
Okay, you know Craig. So what we did is we broke down who I really was as a basketball player, what made me tick, what was my best skill, and what we came up with was rebounding. Rebounding was what I was really, really good at. So every game, all I'd focus on was getting every rebound. I knew if I rebounded well, I would score, and I'd get assists, and I'd be in a mindset of a assertive mindset of just a high activity, high energy level. So all I did was block out the noise. I didn't worry about triple doubles. I just went and got as many rebounds as I could and helped my team win and play tough defense. That was it.
In talking with Craig and in talking with other athletes that I've had the pleasure to speak with, I've constantly brought up what you just talked about, the mental side of things, mm-hmm. and breaking things down. And to me, that's beyond the analytics. I think analytics and then the mental approach to athletics has probably been one of the biggest changes we've seen in the last decade in sports. How big was that for you, tapping in more to the mental side and breaking things down like you did?
Well, it was huge. I mean, my sophomore year, I think I had a few games, came assist short of a triple-double. I was flirting with a triple-double a few times. And then I tear my ACL. I spend 6 months not playing basketball. But I was able to come back the next year better, because we were able to mentally get better and to simplify my game. In basketball, life, and health, simplicity brings, you know, allows you to be consistent. And that consistency breeds momentum. And with momentum, as our prophet says, momentum is everything. Anything can happen with momentum. So I think simplicity is the breeding ground for success. Because when you can simplify things in your mind, it can become attainable, it can be doable, it can be done consistently, and then from there you just get that momentum and it builds and it builds. All of a sudden, one triple double, two, three, four, five, six, and then next year, same thing. So we were able to make it simple in my mind and doable, and I believed in it, and it was focused on things that I was good at it, and it just took off.
You sound like a coach. Oh, wait, that's because you are. You have really gotten into, and I remember during your playing career, you had a mindset change in terms of your fitness, what you ate, all of that stuff. I remember during your playing career, and I think it was after your mission when you got back, there was and we're going to get more into this. The reason I bring it up is because now you're a personal health and fitness coach. So I want to know how you got into that and why that has become such an important part of your life.
Yeah, so it was when I tore my ACLs when everything changed for me. I was like, I have to reevaluate what I'm doing. I'm back from a mission. I'm still trying to get in shape. I played my sophomore year, last game, tore ACL. And so what I discovered, the spirit told me at the time was, you have to change the way you eat. That is going to be the biggest compounding factor in your success. So slowly but surely, and in my journey, I never quit anything. Like, people don't realize me. I was like a candy crackhead. Like, that's why people are like, you don't understand. I love soda. I love candy. I'm like, brother. Like, I used to, like, when I was a kid, 16, 17, it was my birthday. I'd have a big cake. I'd be down there, like, eating the whole thing with a fork by myself. Like, I love candy.
What was the candy of choice? You get one candy. What's the go-to?
I love those little watermelon sour things.
Oh, those are so good.
So good, right?
Yeah.
And so what my approach was, you know, the scripture, line upon line, right? And you know the rest of it. So what I did was I focused on winning my first meal of the day with a healthy smoothie. And it was when I discovered that when I add good into my life, one, it attracts more good, and two, it fills up the space where bad can no longer occupy. There's only so much space for good versus bad. So I discovered this one habit at a time thing, where if I can just simplify and focus on one thing, right? So that was my starting point, a smoothie, healthy smoothie every morning. Had a bunch of spinach, avocados, raw egg, Rocky style for you, some blueberries, a little bit of honey, and I just built that foundation. And I just kept adding good things at a time. And slowly, like, all of a sudden, I didn't want fast food anymore. Because people don't realize, like, it's your identity, who you think you are, that governs your priorities. And your priorities govern your decisions. So all of a sudden, my identity was that much closer to a healthy person. Because I have a healthy smoothie, right? So now, my standards raised, my priorities, you know, improved. And my decisions proved. And I quit all this bad stuff without saying, don't do that, can't have that. And so that's my philosophy with helping people get healthy, is people don't ever want to do it because they have this fear of giving things up.
Yeah.
I can never give this up.
It feels like a lot of it is, well, if I'm going to do this, it's all the things I can't do.
Yes.
Instead of,
exactly.
You just take it and just, it's a simple tweak
exactly,
mentally.
Exactly. So yeah, people are like, man, I can't quit this stuff. And that's why people do 30-day diets and stuff. It's because it's like, I can do this for 30 days. They'll lose 10 pounds. 6 months later, they've gained 15. They're up plus five. Because it builds a bad association. If I'm on a diet, what happens is the healthy food becomes the pain. And the unhealthy food becomes the pleasure, like the hero we miss and love. And so I tell people, don't worry about quitting anything. Just focus on adding. Because I could quit something, right? Spiritually, right? Going to your bishop struggling. What does he tell you? Add good things, right? Scriptures, prayers, temple. Like, he's not telling you, like, yes, it's you don't do that, but that's not the strategy. The strategy is adding good. So same thing with food. It's like, the more good we add, the more we improve our identity. And then our priorities change, and then our decisions change, and then our whole life changes.
So it's not like you're down at the local VASA as a coach
No.
So tell me what the business is and how you got into this and how you get clients. Tell me the relationship you have with your clients.
Yeah, so it's a 90-day program. I build a personalized plan for each individual online. And we work together via text. And through this app, I build them workouts based on their health. I have people over 300 pounds. I have people that are looking to put on 10 pounds of muscle. So every client's different, but I detail a personalized program for them, and we work together, we make adjustments, and I help them achieve their goals. Just
what type of satisfaction do you get from being able to help people in a lot of aspects change their lives?
Yes. Dude, it's amazing. It's one of the best feelings. just to have someone be able to be at like 275 pounds, you know, in 90 days, they're down 25, 30 pounds. 6 months later, they're at 200 pounds. And here's what happens is they say the same thing every time. Like you said, my whole life's changed. Like, your health is really a compound habit. You change your health, you improve your spirituality, you improve just your mindset. Just the way you think and feel improves. That was the biggest thing for me when I changed my health is I felt like this fog like left me. Like I had more clarity. I had more energy. My purpose seemed a little bit more defined. And so it just changes everything for people. And so I just encourage people and not just use whatever you need to use, not just me, just take your health seriously. Because your health doesn't just impact you. It impacts your kids, right?
Yeah.
And then their kids' health. Like, generational health's a real thing. Like the saying, it runs in our family, like disease. That just means there's been a continual bad cycle of health. And the minute you step up to the plate and change your health, you change that whole generational health. So it's a big deal. And I'm a big believer it's a huge plan of Satan to get every generational weaker and weaker with more diseases and more problems. You know, autoimmune diseases are super high. All these diseases, it just weakens us and makes life a little bit harder. And so I'm a big believer that, you know, when we put our spirits in charge over our bodies and we take care of the bodies God's given us, treat like a temple, like we can better serve the Lord. We have more energy, you know. So that's my focus is, for me, I want to better serve the Lord. I want to be a better husband, better dad. So those are my motivation.
Let's stay on that track, because the principles that you were talking about, how has it helped you spiritually as well?
I think just energy. Like, I feel like an energizer bunny. Like, you know, I just like, I don't get lagged during the day where I get tired and I just feel like my purpose is clearer. So energy is probably the biggest overall thing, is I can just have more energy to do things. Thursday mornings, I work in the temple, like, and it's a sacrifice and I love it, but my energy, high energy makes up for that time in the temple. And obviously the Lord helps with that too, with miracles, but it just gives more energy to get more done in less time.
Don't you also think, and this I think is in many different aspects of life, but when you're focusing on one aspect of your life and you start making good decisions and you start seeing success, it makes you kind of want to branch out into other areas. Oh, well, if doing all of these good things here makes me feel so much better, maybe if I start doing more good things here,
do you
notice that it's not just one or two different areas, that this becomes an all-encompassing in everything that you do?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's just that momentum. You're just like, wow. It feels good to put in the effort and improve in something.
Yeah.
That's addicting, like you're saying.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're like, you know what? I need to get better with my words, my thoughts, or I need to get better with my relationships, with listening to people better, right? Or not always trying to add something to people's stories when they're talking, or whatever it is. It's just, it's addicting in a good way to progress.
Well, you talked about basketball. You're part of some basketball camps as well. You and Yoli Childs and Charles Abua, I believe, have got a camp together, and it's called Defensive Love, correct?
Yes.
So tell everybody about what this is. You're part of the staff, and Lauren Gustin, former BYU women's basketball player, also part of it.
Yeah, they're part of the women's side of things. But we, my buddy and I, Kenny Hardy, we created a company called Defensive Love. It's been around since 2017. Primary focus is teaching the defensive side of basketball. No one teaches it. No one emphasizes it. But yet in a game, it's 50% of basketball, right? So we've taken that 2017. Fast forward now today, we own our own basketball club down in South Utah County, where we focus on a European style of training, which is high-level skill and IQ decision-making. We keep it simple. For example, in a session, we will focus on one to two things max. We will work on, you know, applying it by themselves, then, you know, applying it game speed, and then we will play 2-on-2 and 3-on-3 and let them implement it into a live action. So we found, which is European style, that allows kids, because you think about 5-on-5. In America, we roll out the ball and say, go play. But how many of those kids get to get shots up in 5-on-5, right, or get to dribble?
Right.
not a lot. But when you take that and make it 2-on-2, like kids are getting like 10 times, 15 times more reps in those life settings than they are in 5-on-5. So we give kids the opportunity through 2-on-2, 3-on-3 to actually get to use their skills. I mean, all these trainers work on like step back, threes and all this stuff, and these kids will get to shoot like 10 in the whole season of those shots. There's certain players that get to do it a lot, but that's few and far between. So we give them skills like how to properly slide your feet using your back leg, how to close out, how to rebound. We give them skills that they'll be able to get a lot of usage in a game. So all the think about how many times you close out in a game, right? How many times you have opportunity to get rebounds and to move, push with your back leg and stuff like that. So we teach them skills that have a high usage rate in a game because they'll get to use it more versus like just shooting step back three-pointers all day.
I know you've been very supportive of the moves that BYU basketball has made, and now with a new head basketball coach and Kevin Young, what did you make of the hire?
Love it. Great hire. Unbelievable hire. I'm super excited just for his energy. He's a young cat, and I think he's going to bring people in, and he's going to develop them at a high level. So I'm really excited, which it, for me, if you're a BYU, that's what you have to do. You have to be able to find talent that maybe not be a five-star or four-star, but find talent that's maybe underrated, be able to get those guys here and develop them. If you do that at BYU, that's, to me, the missing ingredients, being able to take three stars or good players and turning them into, you know, five stars.
Sure. I know that Coach Young, during his introductory press conference, talked a lot about his goal is to make BYU one of those programs where people that want to go to the NBA, you come to BYU to be prepared to go to the NBA. And obviously with his NBA ties, take me back to when you were deciding on where to go. And obviously you ended up at BYU anyway, but how much of a draw would it be for you as a player then to have a former associate head coach in the NBA be your head coach in college and knowing the connections he has in the league?
Oh, it'd be huge. I would have signed right away. Because, like, every year for my birthday as a kid, I got NBA League Pass. My birthday is October 3rd, right before the season. Like, I loved the NBA. I love watching it after school. I do my homework. 5 o'clock was the first games on, you know, in the East Coast. 7 o'clock that time. And so I don't know what college player really doesn't want to play in the NBA, especially coming out of high school. And so for me, it's like, man, this guy knows the path. He knows how to develop and do all those things. It's a no-brainer for me. And you get to be at BYU. It's like the best of both worlds.
All right, well, we're going to talk about your love for basketball after this quick break. You're listening to the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio. Back to the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio. My name is Jason Shepherd. Happy to have Kyle Collinsworth as my guest here today, talking a lot of hoops, talking a lot about fitness and everything going on in his life. Before the break, we were talking about you'd mentioned how much you love the NBA, and we were talking about new BYU men's basketball head coach Kevin Young. I want to find out from you where the love of basketball started. Can you pinpoint where your love for this sport began?
Really early. I obviously don't remember much, but two older brothers, since, you know, we have pictures of me like 3 years old doing layups on little hoops, and I just always loved basketball. And I think that's something, like, my parents didn't have to motivate me to go and play. Like, I always wanted to go play. I was outside playing all the time. I was watching all the time. I was playing up with my older brothers all the time, you know, 3-4 years older. I was playing on their teams all the time, you know, playing up 3 years. When I was in fourth grade, I was playing on seventh grade teams. I just loved to play. And so to me, it was just something I felt like I just had in my DNA. I just loved to do it since I was a young cat.
And your brother obviously was a big-time high school basketball player as well. How much of an influence was he specifically on you?
I think he just gave me the ability to just tag along and play. I think that's how I learned how to rebound so well. We'd play like 21 tip-in with him and his friends. And if I ever wanted to shoot the ball, I better get the rebound. And so, you know, no one's going to pass to the fourth grader. And so I played on his teams growing up, and I just got to tag along. And, I mean, when you're playing 3 years up, fourth grade to seventh graders, like, you learn very quickly. And I just learned how to navigate through games. And I think that's what taught me to be so smart in basketball. Because even though I'm really athletic as a high schooler in college, as a pro, in fourth grade I wasn't athletic compared to seventh graders. So I had to figure out how to navigate the game in a way that allowed me to make it happen.
Beyond all of the things in terms of, you know, the competition, and it made you better by playing against older guys, how much of that do you look back on with fondness, just the fact that you were spending time with your older brother, or that your brother was, as a younger brother, was giving you the time of day?
Yeah, it was awesome. My dad was the coach, played with my brother. And even my oldest brother, like, we got to play, Chris and me got to play with his friends. And it was just, basketball for us was a way of just being able to compete. I was super, super competitive to a fault. Like, that was something I had to really work on my whole life. I was, like, competitive and stubborn, which drove me and it made me. But I had to be able to channel it and control it. And that was something, that was a big challenge in high school for me, especially 15, 16 years old, of just being able to listen to coaches and not get frustrated over stuff. So I was able to channel that. My mission definitely put that to bed. I got control of it before, but if you talk to some of my coaches, Dave Rose will have some stories early on. I could be wild. I was very, very competitive and crazy, so.
Talk to me about your high school years at Provo High School. What type of experience was high school basketball for you?
I think the biggest thing I learned, Provo High was obviously a dynasty. We were expected to win. I learned to deal with pressure of being the man on a team and performing. So that taught me at a small scale, preparing me to be the best player on a team and living up to expectations and just rising to the occasion.
When you play at Provo High and realizing that BYU is, at the time, literally across the street, was it always going to be BYU? Was there pressure that it was always going to be BYU because you were the local kid? Or was there a part of you that sometimes thought, you know what, maybe I want to go try some of these other places? Because I believe you were recruited by USC, Stanford, Kansas, Virginia, others. I mean, take me through the recruiting process and your thought process that ultimately led you to BYU.
So early on, I went to a Kansas, they had a little, I don't even know what it's called, where they invite people, elite camp, whatever, for their high school players that are looking at. I played really well. I had probably one of the best dunks of my career, a putback dunk, one hand over somebody. Played well. The coach comes up to me and he says, "Are you going on a mission?" No hesitation. I said, "Yes." He said, "All right, well, then you can't come here." He said, "If you change your mind, you can come here." And so I learned early that important principle of just making a decision and sticking with it. But me going on a mission eliminated the Kansases, the Dukes type schools. And I was okay with that. I could have gone, if I said I'm not going on a mission, I could have gone anywhere in the country I wanted. But I said I'm going on a mission. And then it ultimately came down to Virginia and BYU. Tony Bennett, they were at Washington State. They just left to Virginia. And it was really close. Most people don't know this. I almost went to Virginia. So it wasn't crystal clear. Obviously helped. My brother was at BYU. Brandon Davies, my best friend, teammate in high school, were at BYU. And Virginia, as it was getting close to sign, they started, hey, maybe like you play 2 years and go on a mission. They were supportive of it, but they were kind of like just playing around with the idea. And it just, for me, I was like, I can't mess around with this. Like, I got to get on a mission. So I went to BYU. I played the first year, and then rest is history.
So you never wavered one bit on serving a mission then?
No.
How do you think that decision has blessed you to this day?
Oh, man. It's
probably we could probably spend another hour talking, answering that question, right?
Absolutely. It changed everything for me. I mean, living in Russia, learning Russian, I think I was probably the worst in the MTC, the worst speaker in history of MTC, trying to learn a language. And my companion at the time was like, I'm not joking, he was like the best speaker. He just had a feel for languages. Our teacher in the MTC was like, he speaks as good as someone who's been out in Russia for 6 months. He's like, this kid speaks unbelievable. So you have him, who speaks amazing, me, who's terrible. But for 6 months, when I was out in Russia.
And you were in Vladivostok, correct?
Yes, yep, far, far east of Russia, where the hoodlums live. I was in the hood of Russia. Love it. So for 6 months, I'd wake up an hour early, 5:30, to practice Russian. I took a weakness of mine, and I turned it into one of the biggest strengths. On my mission, I got trained. I had a transfer, and then I trained somebody. And then a buddy and I, who was also on the same schedule as me on the mission, we were in the MTC together, we got called as assistants, like, out of nowhere, super, super early. And I'll never forget, I had to translate for the mission president. I'd been out like 4 months. And I butchered it. Like, it was one of the most, like, down, like, bring me to the depths of, like, despair moments. But it was those moments, which I'm sure everybody's had on a mission, that just, I had a choice to make. Feel bad and cry and I can never do this, or dig deeper and make it happen. And so Russian became a strong suit of mine towards, you know, 8 months out beyond the mission. Like, it became, I spoke like a native, I look like a native, I walk like a native, like they thought I was Russian. So the mission taught me, it doesn't matter where you are, your weaknesses, if you rely on God and put your head down and put in the work, like, you can turn it into a strength, like Ether 1227, right? So that's what it taught me, and it taught me to just love the Savior, love the gospel of Jesus Christ. And post mission, right, I tear my ACL. I was like, man. But I was like, I've been here before. So I said, I'm coming back in 6 months. And they're like, no, it'll take about 9 months. I'm like, no, I'm coming back in 6 months. I've learned Russian in 6 months. I'm going to come back in 6 months for my ACL. And so I was back before 6 months, 100%. But it was the mission that taught me all these principles. Every success I've had in life, I can contribute it to my mission. Post-mission, like everything, just my perseverance, my perspective, my ability to think long-term, just be patient in areas of life. So it changed everything for me.
Can you still speak Russian?
I can still speak. It's vocabulary's definitely shrunk because you just don't get to use it. You know, that's where you wish you learned Spanish being here. But yeah, I definitely could still speak. But yeah, I got to start talking to people, using it a little bit more.
So let's go back to the year before your mission. You play your freshman year. Your freshman year at BYU was Jimmer's senior year. So
Correct. You
got to be a part of that, that senior year for Jimmer and everything that came along with it. What did being a part of that year do for you from a basketball standpoint, or maybe to really understand what college basketball was going to be like when you ultimately did come home and you were finally able to play? How much did that year help you 3 years down the road?
You know, high school taught me this well, too. Winning's fun. End of story. That was a very, very fun year. Pressure was high, especially for Jimmer. But winning's very fun. And so that year, just a good reminder that winning is super fun. And it also just, again, made me buckle down, right? I'm a freshman starting on one of the best teams in the country. And now, like, are you going on a mission again? People are like, you going? Like, Jimmer leaves, the team's yours now. And so, again, it's just one of those where you have to turn down the world, and it just strengthening moments where you just say no to the temptations of the world and follow the Lord. So, fun year, though. Love those teammates. You know, still friends with all of them to this day. So, it was a great team.
Okay, let's jump back forward. You mentioned the ACL injury and how you were able to come back and be full strength after about 6 months. How did you do that? Because that's not normal.
Yeah, I think learning Russian was a six-month period. So I just broke it down into a six-month period. And I surround myself with the right team. We had The surgeon in Park City, Dr. Cooley, my physical therapist, Seth Kelson in American Fork, Bob Medina was our strength coach, and my wife, she's my girlfriend, I think at the time we just started dating. So that was my four people. I got a team. I think it's important to have a team to surround yourself with people that believe in you and have, you know, your best interests in mind. And so we got the team together. We came up with a plan, and we just stuck with it, and we're super diligent. A thing that really helped, too, outside of nutrition was using the swimming pool. Because what the swimming pool allowed me to do, I created this method. I called it 50, 75, 100. So let's say you're the doctor and you're like, Kyle, in a week you can start jogging. What I would do is I'd go in the pool, I'd jog at 50%, jog at 75%, then jog, do a full out jog 100%. And then on the ground, I do that 50%, 75%, 100%. And I did that through every phase. You know, we got walking, like walking. I did that with walking, making sure you walk normal. We had jogging. You have running. You have sprinting. And you have jumping. And so every phase I did that with. It's just a 50, 75, 100 in the water, then 50, 75, 100 on the ground. And what that did for me is it created confidence. Like if I'm doing the jumping motion in the water, it's half your body weight, right? But I still get the same motion of being able to jump without all the weight. But what that did for me was give me confidence that I could do it. Like I can jump and go, you know, heel to toe and explode off the ground. So that was one of the niches that we created through the process. And I don't know how it just kind of, you know, just kind of came together for us was that swimming pool was huge for me.
Well, obviously it worked because your BYU career was fantastic. We already talked about you with the triple doubles and setting the record there. You won the WCC Player of the Year award during your time at BYU. What did that award mean to you at that time?
I mean, it meant a lot. Because you think about where I was before, 2 years, I didn't play basketball for two whole years. Like, nada. I was playing soccer. That was it. So for two whole years, no basketball. I come back, and then, you know, I have about 5 months to get in shape for the season. I play this season. End of the year, I tear my ACL. So we're looking at 2.5 years during the prime peak basketball, I didn't play. So for me to take that and to be the player of the year in my conference, to be the best player, it meant a lot. It just meant a lot of like, you know what? I overcame a lot to get here. So it was like the cherry on top of my career at BYU of just like we're leaving on a mission, tearing my ACL, and then being able to get to that point.
Do you have a moment or a game or a certain play that always stands out to you about your BYU career? Is there anything like that that you always reflect on? I was like, yeah, that was that's a moment I'm never going to forget.
Yeah, so in the my junior year WCC tournament, we're playing Portland. Mm-hmm. My sophomore year, freshman sophomore year, I struggled with free throws. I get a team around me, figure it out. I end up going from like 56% to 74% my junior year. So taking that weakness again, here we are. And then I hit a free throw to break the triple-double record. Six for this season. And so for me, it was a moment where, like, I'm up there. I knock down the first free throw, knock down the second, all net, super comfortable up there to break the record. To me, it was just one of those moments where it was like, again, overcoming a weakness, digging deep, relying on the Lord. So it was just cool to break the record with a free throw and doing it at 74% compared to like 56% my sophomore year.
What role did and does Coach Rose still play in your life? What type of relationship and what did he mean and does mean to you to this day?
He taught me how to be just a fierce, consistent competitor. Coach Rose is so competitive. He wants to win. So we automatically, I said earlier, I'm super competitive, like fiery as well. We automatically clicked and bonded early on because we were very similar. And sometimes we butted heads in a good way, a very healthy way. I think that's good sometimes for players and coaches to do. So he just taught me how to be a competitor at the college level, right? So I always admire Coach Rose. Everyone knows the scenes of him ripping off his jacket. But what you don't see is the scenes in practice that I won't be sharing on this podcast.
Now that they're I think him throwing his jacket is still a meme.
Yeah.
I think our gift.
It is.
It's a meme and a gift, I think.
It is for sure. And I need to get that gift, and I want to use it more. But, yeah, so he's just very competitive guy, and he just taught me the spirit of being competitive. Yeah, being competitive, and I always loved him and respected him for that.
Well, speaking of competitive, I know that your wife is also
pretty competitive.
And for those that don't know,
you
got married in 2015. You referenced that, you know, you and Shay were dating. Shay is, and when I say a cross-country and track star, I want to underline star.
Yeah. Oh,
Shay,
yeah.
Then Martinez, was elite in collegiate athletics. And obviously, you ended up turning pro for a little while. Take me through that courtship and what drew you two to each other. I'm assuming some of the competitive was probably part of that.
I think without knowing it, there was I was attracted to her, like, just desire to keep getting better, and she was attracted to that with me as well. She's just a competitor. She works super hard, like, and she just knows how to work. And so, you know, we about two dates into it, it was rest was history.
You knew.
Like, it just knew. Like, you don't want to say anything. She doesn't want to say anything. I don't want to say anything.
You don't want to let everybody know
weirdo.
That quick. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, whoa.
It's like, we don't want to play into the stereotype, but.
Yeah. We dated for a little over a year. We got married in the off season, my off season in June. But yeah, it was just, I just admired her ability to work hard, and she got better every year, and she's the best athlete in the family, I tell people, and she's unbelievable at running. So it was pretty cool to watch her do her thing at BYU, and she'd watch me, and then we just support each other through the highs and lows, and we found a lot of commonality dating through that, and we found a lot of strength through each other as we tried to achieve our goals.
So let's go now to your college career comes to an end, and now it's time to look forward to the professional ranks.
Yeah.
Take me through the thought process after being done with your college career, knowing you wanted to keep playing. You don't get drafted, but you do get an opportunity to play. So what was that time like?
Yeah, I was supposed to get drafted by the Sacramento Kings at, I want to say, like 57th or 59th pick, around that range. My agent kind of talked him out of it, which I think was really good, because you can actually, if you're like the top 35 pick, great, even top 40, but the last 20 picks of the draft sometimes can get trapped and you don't actually make as much money. So I was able to negotiate a partial guaranteed deal with the Dallas Mavericks, go to training
camp.
Your
favorite team, by the way.
My favorite team growing up. I'm like, okay, here we go. Destiny's waiting. So I go start workouts with them. In the pre-draft, I had an unbelievable workout with Dallas. Their picks were a little too early for me, my range. I mean, especially back then, I was 24. 24 back then was like you're 38. And now everyone seems to be 24, 25, that having served missions. I mean, you got like Utah's quarterbacks like 20, 38.
I think he's 36.
He's 36, yeah. And no one seems to care now. So It's just so funny how that works. Side note. But, yeah, so I was a little older. That hurt me as far as draft stock goes, which I was okay with. And so, boom, get drafted by the Mavs. I'm like, this is my one shining moment, right? This is going to flow perfectly. Summer league, didn't play what I thought I could. I was kind of off the ball. I wanted to be point guard, kind of like not find rhythm with that. Going to training camp, Dorian Finney-Smith, I don't know if you know him.
Yep.
I was competing against him for a contract.
Now with the Nets.
Nets on a $100 million deal, right? So he was just an elite player. I don't know how he didn't get drafted. Competitor. He beat me out for the spot. I go play in the G League that year with the Mavericks. Rebounded the ball well. Overall, not a good rookie year for me. End up like spraining my ankle bad the end of the year. So here I am again, right? Get cut from my favorite team. I haven't played in the NBA. Disappointing G League season for me. I have to regroup. So I used to live up by Slate Canyon. We had a condo up there. I started just hiking up the face of Slate Canyon. And I found the spot that flattens out from the parking lot to there. It was barely under a mile. And so I started just hiking up that thing and seeing how fast I could do it. I started out about 38 minutes. It's straight up the face. There's no trails. This isn't deer zigzag. We're going straight up the face. Started out 38 minutes. And I told myself, hey, listen, if you could get up that thing in under 20 minutes, you could play in the NBA. And so 5 days a week, I'd pack water. I'd pack my scriptures. I'd pack my journal. And I'd hike that mountain at 5:30 in the morning. And every time I get up top, I'd visualize myself in an NBA uniform. And I did this for about over 90 days. One of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. Just took everything I had to on Monday to get up and do it. And then on Tuesday. And so it was very, very hard and intense. But I remember in September, I visualized myself in an NBA uniform so clearly I knew what happened. I knew as an NBA player. So I come back down the mountain. I call my coach of the G League team. I said, I want to come back. I'm coming back to the G League team. I said, it's going to be a quick trip. I'm going to be there and I'm going to get out and be in the NBA. He's like, absolutely, let's do it. So I show up to training camp in unbelievable shape with the G League team. Like crazy good shape, rolling. And then in December sometime, we get a call from the Mavericks. I'm up on a two-way, then signed 2 10-days, and I finished the rest of the year with them. So again, it just taught me, hey, just because the situation is this now doesn't mean you can't change it. So I dug deep, and I took getting cut from my favorite NBA team to then playing with my favorite NBA team and being able to play with Dirk Nowitzki, my favorite player, and still being friends with him to this day, and it's pretty surreal feeling.
How did you wrap your mind around, because you said it's your favorite team, and whether you had gone and gotten an opportunity from the Mavericks or from the Orlando Magic, the goal was to be in the NBA, and that alone would have been unbelievable. But the fact that it was your favorite team, and I'm still trying to figure out how you were a Mavericks fan living here in Utah, but that's fine. We'll get into that maybe in another episode. But then sharing a locker room with your favorite player, all of that, how do you wrap your mind around all that?
Yeah, it was surreal. And like Dirk and I, we were really good friends. It was me, Dirk, JJ Barea, Dwight Powell. Like on the road trips, we were eating. We go out to dinner every time. Like,
did Dirk pay?
Dirk paid. Rookies don't pay because we have to, if they need something, we have to go and do it.
So
rookies don't pay. So he had the bill, or JJ or Dwight would pay, one of those three guys. But it was cool just to be able to like hang out with him. And he's such a funny, like down to earth guy. He's an unbelievably good guy. And so it was crazy. Like I named my dog Dirk when I was little. And now we're teammates on the NBA. So just to go from there to that, it just goes to show you if you believe in it and you're willing to work for it, it can happen for you.
So what happens next in terms of your pro career? Take us through. Because I'm assuming you finish that year and you think, okay, well, here's my opportunity.
Yeah,
now I'm in the league. Now I'm going to stay in the league. Take me through what happens next.
Yeah, I ended the year. Like, I had some really good games. My last game of the year, I almost got a triple-double. I had 13, 11, and 8. Against some good momentum. I'm about to go to summer league with the Mavericks. And I'm down in St. George. I go down there for a week and put myself through absolute heck on earth. I do 3 days, wake up at 5 in the morning just to get my mind right and get my confidence up. I get a call from my agent during one of the workouts. He's like, the Mavs traded for DeAndre Jordan, and we have to get rid of three guys. And he's like, you're one of the guys. He says they didn't want to do it. It's just part of the business. All the other guys are multiple year deals, and it just money wise doesn't work out. And so I was like, man. So that was my first taste of the business. Like, it was going well. I was talking to Rick Carlisle all the time. We were working on my shot. My shot was cruising. It was feeling good. We were talking about putting me, you know, at the backup point guard position, or, you know, play point guard too. Like, things were really flowing with the Mavs. And then those trades happen, and then all things are out the window. If you're one of those last three, four guys in a roster, like, just like that, it could change. So they had to waive me and a couple other guys to clear space to bring in DeAndre Jordan. And then I ended up going to the Raptors on a training camp deal. And then I ended up breaking my foot that year. So had to regroup again. But it's crazy. Every place I've been, like with the Raptors, I've met a teammate, Rodney Pryor, who's a great friend of mine today. And he's taught me, he met some people, so much about money, financial things, that's blessed my life to this day so much. So every stop I've been at, I've learned a critical lesson that's blessed my life. And so sometimes I was like, man, why can't I just keep playing in the NBA? But honestly, that year with the Raptors has blessed my life financially more than if I were to continue to play in the NBA, you know? So yeah. Sometimes it's like, you don't understand why, but there's been people I've met every stop in my career that's changed my life. So it's pretty cool.
You've had opportunities, you know, in a couple of different places. You even went to Japan.
Yeah,
to
3 years. Yep.
Yeah, so you were there for, you know, for 3 years, as you said. There comes a time, though, for every athlete when you have to make that decision. Am mm-hmm. I going to keep doing this, or is it time to try something else? What was that decision for you? How did you come to that conclusion?
One, I was like, my body feels good. I always wanted to end my career feeling good. I've seen a lot of players. I mean, Dirk's a great example. He regrets playing the last 3 years of his career because he just can't walk very well. He can't move that good. So I wanted to end my career healthy, good, and on my terms. So I decided, you know what? I'm in a good spot, and I have a lot going for me where I can get some momentum. So, you know, I can delay the inevitable, play 4 or 5 more years, or I can be healthy, strong, feel good, have no bad injuries. You know, I have a little boy who's going to be 3 in June, so I'm thinking for him, I want to be playing hoops with him when he's older, right? I want to be running around, want to be active. So all that went to consideration, and so I decided, you know, I can easily transition to this health coaching. I love real estate, doing commercial real estate. So I can keep doing that. And then we have our defensive love company. Mm-hmm. Going to build that up bigger, do more camps in Idaho, all over Montana, Idaho, Utah. And then we're starting our club down in South Utah County. So I had all these things waiting for me. So for me, it was probably one of the smoothest transitions of just like, I'm healthy, I feel good, I'm leaving on my terms. And so it just made a lot of sense to me, well, and my family.
Let's wrap it up with this. And you mentioned your family.
Yeah.
Loving wife, son and a daughter. You mm-hmm. have 2 children. What is life like for you now with your family?
It's just awesome. It feels so good to be in one spot. I mentioned earlier, since I was 16, always having to travel, been all over the world, you know, Russia on my mission, Dallas, Toronto, Japan. Just feels good to be home, in a home with my family, see my kids. Like yesterday, my son was in his crib bed and my daughter was like trying to get in, and they were just laughing, and she was laughing at everything he did. It was just one of those moments. Just
those little moments. A lot, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Just like, she's laughing at him, they're interacting and playing, and it was just like, it feels good. There's nothing like kids and being able to raise kids. It's the high of highs.
Well, thank you so much for doing this. I hope you enjoyed it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thanks for sharing everything. It is, like I said, I mean, I covered your entire career as a player at BYU, and you were just an absolute thrill to be able to watch play, and can't say thanks enough for doing this, so thank you so much.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
All right, my name is Jason Shepherd. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms, or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.